FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome, and you are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Carrie Lutz. It's 6/25/18. Well, you've been following Bitcoin. Bitcoin's not doing too good, is it? It's right around 6,300, down from 19,400. What a shock. Well, Bitcoin's not the only alternative investment out there. Others aren't doing well either, such as gold and silver. What is an investor to do? Well, first of all, be part of the show, join the dialogue, and participate. Just send your emails to kl@carrielutz.com. Well, Lior Gantz is back with us again. It's been a few months. Lior, you're founder of wealthresearchgroup.com, and you're an investor. We're thrilled to have you back on.
Hey, I'm glad to be here, Carrie.
So, we look back, Bitcoin peaked 12/16 of December 16th of last year. I actually wrote an article that it was time to sell half of it on that day, published the next day. And, you know, it hasn't been doing well. It's making lower highs and lower lows, which is never a good trend to follow. And then we've got precious metals. You know, they've been on the skids a little bit. They were holding up quite well up until 2 weeks ago when they got slammed, whether you think it's a raid or whatever. What is an investor to do? What are your top investments that you're focusing on, Lior?
Well, first of all, with regards to Bitcoin and precious metals, just important to understand their role. So in 2017, you've had, let's go back even to 2011. In 2011, you had a precious metals end of bull market mania. So the bull market started in 2000. For 11 straight consecutive years, Carrie, gold and silver kept going up. That is a bull market. That is a very unique bull market, and it has never happened with any other commodity. So when they peaked much above their production costs. Silver peaked around 49, where, as you know, most low-cost producers, they can get silver out of the ground for about $13, $14, $15 per ounce. So you're talking about a commodity that trades for 300% premium to its production cost. That's unsustainable, and no market behaves that way. Same thing with gold. Gold goes out of the ground for about $800 to $1,100, $1,200. So when you see it at $1,900, that's well above its production cost. Obviously, less speculative than silver, then it has less of a mania. And so we've seen them come down and bottom even below their production cost. And now they're hovering just above it, which is where I suspect they'll stay unless there is a currency crisis or an inflationary pressure that creates a situation where investors are willing to pay the premium because they're afraid of the alternative. So otherwise, investors have other alternatives to gold and silver because they do not produce any yield, no cash flow. They have holding costs and all sorts of other complications that some investors, some funds, institutional money do not want to handle. And therefore, they stick around that level. But we got to remember, gold is up about 20% in this bull market since December of 2015. And silver is up as well. So if you're holding because you are simply looking to build a position with gold and silver as precious metal, as physical allocation, then it's just realize that gold and silver's role is simply to be an insurance. I can tell you what I do personally, and this is kind of different than other people. So in terms of gold and silver, I do not try to make money off of gold and silver. The only place that I try to make money on is gold and silver mining shares or commodity companies in general. With gold and silver, I just took my lifestyle burn rate, my monthly lifestyle burn rate. Let's say it's about $5,000 a month. And I multiplied it by 24 and I simply converted that fiat, so 120,000 for in this example, to gold and silver, 80% gold, 20% silver. And I just allocated it between 4 vaults in 4 different continents. And I have some in my main residence, and that's it. That is the extent of my position in gold and silver physical. And I just make sure that it's about 4 to 7% of my entire net worth. So if it's more than that, I try to adjust it by investing with other assets as well. And that's the extent of it. With cryptocurrencies in 2017, there was another speculative mania. And whenever there are speculative manias, Wealth Research Group wants to be there early. It's simply a speculative mania, and you want to be part of it as soon as possible because you're basically jumping on the bandwagon before it's moving. And that's what happened with us. We in March of 2017, we covered Ethereum at $12, and people that put $1,000 in there ended up, you know, having like 90 grand in a few months. So, or Dash at $30, it went over $800, $900. Bitcoin, obviously, at $400. One of the earliest newsletters to cover that. And so, when the speculative mania is over in commodities, you can expect it to trade right around that production cost. Now, for cryptocurrencies, the mining cost is a little different. Now, the difference, Kerry, between cryptocurrencies and precious metals is that precious metals, gold and silver, are mined for thousands and thousands of years. So there's an added layer of safety there. Whereas cryptocurrencies, let's put Bitcoin apart because it's very different than the other ones. But the rest of them are still in a very much a trial period. So. Right. You can see them even trading much below that or just shutting down, especially the ones that are, you know, more man-made, I should say. So yeah. They have a founder, they have a team, they're more like a company than an actual coin. And then the word cryptocurrencies is not relevant anymore. It's not the right term. There's about 4 or 5 coins, really currencies out there. That's what they do. They aim to be a medium of exchange. It's Bitcoin, that's Dash, Monero, and like the privacy coins or the coin or Litecoin, for example. Right. They are trying to be a medium of exchange. The rest of them, they have their own niches that they're trying to fill. Some of them are even like utility or tokens or you know, being a smart contract, etc. Mm-hmm. So. When you think about them from now on, just think about them as very young, unproven crypto assets, which do not yield anything or generate any income by way of dividends or profits to the token holders or the coin holders. And basically, you need to speculate on the future of the company. Nothing wrong with that. I have a friend who speculated on the future of Intel in the 70s, and he's obviously a 100 millionaire right now. So there's definitely room for that in a portfolio, but it's not what we saw in 2017 where people were going left and right buying everything up. Whoever made money, conserve that money and don't expect that to happen. You know, I've been investing since I was 16. I started babysitting at 13 when my father went bankrupt and I had to start making money and done babysitting, assisting coaching in basketball, painting decks, delivering pizzas, whatever. Until the age of 16, I had like $20,000 invested and saved up, and I got my parents to sign a waiver so I can invest my own money in a bank account. And I've been investing ever since. So it's 18 years now since the bust. So I actually opened up my account a month after the dot-com bubble burst. So it was a great timing. Obviously, I didn't know anything about timing, you know, when I got started, but got lucky and fortunate with my timing. And as you know, squeezing 14, 15% annually out of the markets is hedge fund material. And seeing something go up 90 times in 1 year,
that has
really helped me
to
take profits when I had them in cryptocurrencies. Yeah, the last one we covered was Ripple in December of 2017, and it went 1,000% up in less than 30 days. So that's when we kind of pushed it back, scaled it back, and really stopped covering new picks since January in terms of cryptocurrencies before the crash happened. So we didn't predict the crash, but we kind of saw that this is very, very abnormal, and people should really consider what they're doing going forward. Yeah, this is with regards to precious metals and cryptocurrency. So
okay, so look, Lior, where we are now, you've got several investment ideas. We got time for three of them. Let's hear what your top concepts are for 2018 going into 2019.
okay, well, if you are looking to really capitalize on what's going on right now, I think we are in a grand finale for this economic expansion, and we're going to see one more major rally in the U.S. equities. So that's the backdrop to where things can go forward. And I wrote about this in my 2018 portfolio allocation. You can go to wealthresearchgroup.com/portfolio and download my personal asset allocation for 2018. And then my top idea right now is a company called Owens and Minor. It's a very established company. It's been around 150 years. It went public 1971. And its PE ratio is much below its historical averages. It has a great plan going forward. It's a $1 billion company, 6% dividend. So this is a company that is almost like a blue chip in the making. And the reason that I'm investing in it is because if you couple the capital appreciation of going reverting to the mean for that company, coupled with the dividend, the 6% dividend, and the earning per shares growth that I believe the company will have going forward, Kerry, in the next 10 to 20 years, this company can compound at a 21 to 22% a year, better than Buffett.
That's amazing.
So that is amazing. And the that is literally $4 out of every $10 that I've made in 2018 have gone to invest in that company. So I'm that confident about it being cheap right now. And this is what I'm doing with my own money. So this is literally me sharing my treasure trove with you and your listeners, because I know that many of them are either interested in income, which the 6% dividend covers, but are also are also interested in growth, which a 17% just reversion to the mean per year in the next 10 years is amazing. But then you add the additional 8% of earning per shares growth, and this becomes a monster. The second thing that I would cover, another one, but this is much more speculative. This is a high risk, high reward idea, and it's marrying AI, which is artificial intelligence, with blockchain technology. So Anthony LaCavera, who founded Global Life Tech, he's a guy who had five successful exits, and I met him recently. And you know, he sold Wind, the fourth largest mobile network in Canada, for $1.6 billion, founded it and sold it to Shaw Communications, a big company in Canada. And I think with the IPO that he just did, Global Life Tech, it's a company that's going to be first to market softwares that enable blockchain to work with AI. And that is something that I'm personally extremely excited about. And I'm going to be covering this company at the Wealth Research Group Letter. And in fact, we wrote a management vetted report that they went over and proof checked. And you can have access to that at wealthresearchgroup.com/live. But to answer your question, Kerry, in terms of speculative positions, this is by far my number one.
Really? So you're really firmly behind it. And what do they do again exactly?
So what they do is they use joint ventures, which is literally the best way to build a software company. If you think about the competitive advantage of Microsoft, for example, and the reason that they're able to return about 80% of their clients over 30 years is because it's very hard to reproduce the switching cost if you want to move away from Microsoft software. So, for example, think of having thousands of computers in your enterprise, in your business, and now a new company comes in and say, hey, I have a product I think is better than Microsoft. Do you want to check me out? Just the hassle of changing all of your employees' systems and retraining them on a new system is very difficult. So getting away from Microsoft, you're kind of a captive audience when you're a Microsoft client. Oh, yeah. Same thing with many other companies. So the switching costs are insane. So what Anthony did is he joint ventured with other companies that are already selling their products to existing customers. And what he's going to do is he's going to license new software to those clients, and he's going to create new softwares using AI and blockchain for those existing clients. In other words, it's like he's approaching Microsoft and he's saying, hey, I have technologies that you don't have. Let's sell them to your existing customers, and let's obviously split the equity and the profits. But it's a way to get into that door and not have all these existing companies change from one software company to another. A very classic example is how Sony built the PlayStation empire. So the console is very easy to sell because you sell it at about cost. You make literally no money in the machine. But what do you need once you have the machine? You need the games.
You need the games.
The games is where the money is where the cash flow is where you retain the customer forever. Because if a new company comes in, you would need to dump your console, right? In your mind, think about the customer. He's going to sell his console to buy a new console and buy new games. So he doesn't want to do that. It's very hard. So if I was a new company, if I was a video games company, I would approach Sony and say, hey, I have better designs than you have. Here's my games. Sell it to your customers. Let's split. It's easier that way. And that's what he's done. I think it's brilliant. The company's only 1 week old on the market. So it's a brand new IPO. And it's a very exciting company. Obviously, it's going to take 2 to 3 years for this company to mature, have great revenue, and move forward. But the amount of connections that Anthony has building companies for over 20 years in the private sector, this has really helped them ink joint ventures already and negotiate many more right now. So it's a company in hyper growth mode, which is exactly what I want when I go for these micro caps that are only 100 million in market cap and have the potential to grow 3, 4, 5, 10 times, depending on how much acceptance they have.
Hey, well, it's interesting. So it's a razor blade approach kind of with the game consoles. We all know that, you know, Gillette doesn't make money selling the razor holder. It makes money selling the disposable razor blades.
And exactly.
There's a lot of models like that. All right. So give us your third and final one, Lior.
Well, let's go back to a much more conservative, and I'll shock you by telling you that one of the companies that I believe, so just to go back a little bit, because I know your audience is very sophisticated, so to kind of give you a backdrop, when you invest, there's two things to consider. One is the potential total return of your investment, but the other thing is the risk you're taking. So when you only look at total return, the potential return, you're going to have a lot of trouble as an investor, because you've got to figure out what's called risk-adjusted returns. So if there's a company that offers 25% in potential upside, but it has massive risk, you've got to be aware of the risk as well. On the flip side, if there's a company that offers only, let's say, 14% return potentially, but it has low risk, that might be better for your portfolio, for your situation, if you're already loaded up on a lot of risky assets. So for me, I'm going to shock you and tell you that one of the lowest risk companies in the world right now has a very high potential for upside, and it's Walgreens. Walgreens has the potential to grow at about 20% a year. Again, Warren Buffett, 19.7% for 63 years has made him worth, well, over $100 billion at one point. So this is a company that can really grow going forward internally using just more of what they're doing right now. And the fact that the company's shares are down from 100 to 60 in a few years, we're talking Walgreens, this is very, very unique. And obviously, like you know, Walgreens has made two big acquisitions, Rite Aid and Boots Alliance in Europe. And so they're growing internationally. So this is not only a domestic company anymore, they're the largest pharmacy in the world. And as you know, the world is aging in at a pace that we've never seen. We're going to have this is insane to say so, but the most the demographic group that is growing the fastest is the centenarians, the people that are over 100. US is going to have more than 500,000 of them in 10 years. 500,000 people in the US will be more than 100 years old. The world is getting older, and many, many individuals rely on some sort of a either, you know, whatever it is in terms of medical supplies.
Well, so, the centenarians are going to need their Viagra for sure. That's a 1,200 more Viagra consumers, or 500,000 more Viagra consumers. There's something like 12,000 people over 100 years old in Florida alone, I just read. So obviously that number is going up, and that's going to definitely help the development of self-driving vehicles. You can't allow someone 100 years old, although I know one of them who's not the worst driver in the daylight. You don't want him on the road at night, though, for sure. So,
sure. And Japan is in the same light of what you're saying. Japan is preparing millions of assistant robots. So instead of having a caretaker for someone who's 85 to 100 to whatever, they're going to have robots doing this for you, or take care of many of the chores that you need to prepare for the elderly. So around the world, this is something that is a huge phenomenon. And I think, obviously, again, going back to AI, it all blends in. This is one of the biggest themes in the world is the aging population. And with the one-child policy that China has implemented over the years, they are going to have a huge demographic problem because they have many elderly going forward and not a lot of young people. It's something that investors could really pay attention to and obviously think about what they do to in order to capitalize on the situation by investing in companies that deal with this.
Interesting. So cashing in on that demographic trend. So just give us your three picks again, just so we can write them down.
Owens & Minor is definitely the highest reward, lowest risk company in the world right now, in my opinion. And if you go to our website, to wealthresearchgroup.com, and you click on the top menu on Dividend Mania, and on the other one that's called Wealth Stocks, you're going to see a list of download reports. You can kind of sit over the weekend and enjoy and see the entire philosophy about this. And then every 2 months, we're updating on Owens & Minor and companies like it as they are in my personal trove. So these are the companies that I personally invest in. And every 2 months, on the third Thursday of every month, every even month, we update them. So the next update on these companies will be in the 23rd of August, 2018. And then obviously October, December, and onwards. Walgreens is the lowest risk company in my portfolio that has a 20% potential. So I do invest in a lot of low risk companies, but they don't have that sort of an upside potential. This is unique because you're talking Buffett type returns for a company that's everywhere. It's just insane to think about this anomaly, but here it is in front of us. And then with a really high flyer one, a company that's only 130 million Canadian market cap, but has a vision to become a $20 billion behemoth. You're talking with about Global Life Technologies, a company that's only been on the market for 1 week. They just rang the opening bell in the Toronto Stock Exchange. And so it's a very brand fresh company with a founder, Anthony LaCavera, who owns 40% of the stock. So he's deep, neck deep into this company. He has a lot of skin in the game, wants to build the first commercialized AI company to offer blockchain solutions, and has a big, big vision. I mean, the guy's a visionary and an entrepreneur, had five successful exits, which is five more than most people. Sure. And if you want really the full research for my 108 days of looking at this company, you can go to wealthresearchgroup.com/live, which is the ticker for this company.
All right. Hey, well, been great having you on again, Lior. Again, your website is wealthresearchgroup.com. Check out the site and check out financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Sign up for a free newsletter and be part of the show. Send us your emails, kl@carrylutz.com, Twitter feed @CarrieLutz, Facebook page, Financial Survival Network. Lior, always great to have you on. We will talk to you again real soon.
Thank you, sir.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next. We'll be right back.